bomb shelters. These knocks wear boots as they walk across the ceiling. Where is the face with two heels for eyes? The body with fingers put out like cigarettes on a sidewalk? The little finger that bleeds like it was half smoked? The knuckles endure. The sound crystallizes. The doorknob novas. The grain of space splits. A knot thick as a galaxy spins wildly. To create an ear, the antlers are cut off near the skull and held as a tuning fork. It's a slow beginning. The second one has no title other than B, the second letter of the alphabet, which relates to the last line, the middle line. The horizon, a cut peach. This room is soaked from an overripe dawn. The mattress keeps its mouth shut, beat all night, and the sheets still won't talk. But the pillows sob their chicken feathers, and the iron that frames the bed has goose flesh. In this light, there are twice as many possibilities for error, each one to be explored down to its molecular structure. Someone will sit in front of the mirror and count the electrons. Soon the words begin to slip from between soft lips to tie the voids together. Now the misunderstanding is complete. C. Last week it was a nightmare. Even the rat in the wall had, as it scratched its claws bloody, trying to get in bed with whomever wasn't sleeping. In a single light storm, the sea dried up. A mile of gills choked closed. The mud opened into vacant veins. With one fin on the lightning, you were left to reformulate the amino acids. When the three alchemical syllables were of the wrong valence, the air became hard as scales. Sharks were wheeled off as paraplegics or lizards. D. How old are these oak trees? Has anyone checked the warranty? The cubic yards of oxygen after just 50 years? Was there any fine print on the upper Osage River behind the Truman Dam? How long was it to last? And where is the nearest town with a garage and reliable mechanic if the till should falter and ice fall down from the Arctic? Or the axis wear out and need replacement before Wednesday, when the sun would burn a hole through Ecuador and empty Lake Titicaca? Is there enough tread left on this limestone for the odometer to turn over another time? Hey, would you please ask the gas station attendant to fill her up, clean the rearview mirror, and if Sears and Roebuck is on this road? E. There are too many of us burning on the hot back of this hour. Horses paw the field, scorched skin. The long shadow of the fence is a sweaty black bracelet on a sharecropper's wrist. Two horseflies buzz out of the throat of whomever ran up the road to tell us we were through. We have dug too deep. The shovel tips are worn flat. We have penetrated beyond the Precambrian strata. We are down to the star. F. The field, prostrate, folds its hands after reaching a cloud for shade. The burn on its forehead wrinkles the snail dry. A thirsty Angus stretches across the fence, stops only when its neck starts to bleed. Its swollen tongue rebounds red. Driving out of this valley, in the rear view mirror, her thighs close around the left eye. One wheel heads for the ditch. The star begins to break in half. No matter what happens, it's not enough. I think maybe these poems reflected a weird fascination with the evolution of the human body. I keep making references to different... I don't know if you ever heard, but this man had this theory about the evolution of the human brain, that the human brain evolved so fast that rather than parts of the brain degenerating, they were just covered over with another layer of brain. And so you have the medulla being the lizard brain and the cerebrum being the mammalian brain. And then the, is that right? And then the cerebellum? The neocortex being the human aspect, and the human aspect is just a very thin layer of brain tissue.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess ever since I read that, I realized that weaving all these images together had a very multi-layered effect. G. Whatever wants to be forgotten crawls away from the wall and into the high grass. With no wind, the blades bend into the sand. What we try to hide fills our pockets with sweat. From our spines, we pull blind fish. We hope to buy a part of the sea, but realtors want earnest money and say the mineral rights are already sold. At night, we swim so hard the water parts and the air throws us down beneath the same stars. Our throats ache below our ankles, and on the beach, doubled over, we cough up galaxies. This is kind of the stopping part of the first part of these poems. Another letter H. The scales are left as hair falling from the head down the back, perhaps to the waist. Claws, the accumulation of dying time, have flattened to protect the soft fingers. Gills are buried in blood deep in the body. They no longer sleep in water and wake. Somewhere the tail fell off, leaving the spine off balance. And the jaw grows smaller, kicking out the wisdom teeth. Prehensile, the thumb forces stone into genocide. One eye stands beside the other in the same dream, and there's someone shouting, final, impossible. The next series of poems which are related to these letters all have titles, and like what they're kind of elaborations, specific instances where I'm trying to apply some of the things that I've said to particular situations. This first one's called Stalking the SST. Inside the magnetic membrane, human exhaustion progresses. Radiation tumors flower under a thinning sky. Toward night, it falls. Above the cirrus clouds tangled on the invisible banks of the jet stream, a solitary magnesium feather trails behind. That's the contrail. Its shaft grows brighter through the gathering chorus of crickets. Around the sacred cypress we sit, sharpening spears, shaking our fire sticks and gourds, hardening our bodies with prayers and bear grease. As hunters, we are ready. Tomorrow's airplane incarnation must be extincted from the infinity of days. One night I had this desire to go to the Astronomy Observatory in Columbia. And I thought, boy, wouldn't that be a neat thing to share with my little boy? So I said, hey, let's go. And he says, hey, I don't want to go. I might miss this TV program. Of course, it happened to be The Incredible Hulk. You know, and I think that's another time. Anyway, this generated a poem, which I call The Incredible Hulk. which one of the things that I like to do in a poem is bring it full circle to try and like tie it together with a ribbon. You wrap it around a package and you bring the other end back to the beginning. And the first line, I follow my voice into the dark. And the last line, fade into their voices. And all this in between has to deal with that kind of distance. I follow my voice into the dark. After the final sound, there's the alphabet of exhaustion. The Milky Way rotates once every 500 million years, maybe 8 or 9 times since creation. In this life, I realize I barely move. There is the fading into ambiguity as the distance swells, 30,000 light years from Earth to the center of this galaxy. Hey, who did you wave at the last intersection? The soft blur in the corner that suddenly demands attention. Did you know the nearest star, Alpha Centauri, is 26 trillion miles? And caught behind the eyelid, the after image that won't clarify. We ride this white claw as it scratches the supple back of ether. Andromeda, where is he? The one who was to lift us from these jaws that never close but keep biting through this rock we live on. I can't hear you so far away from the eye. Diamond compression, a sum implodes, becomes a white dwarf. One handful weighs 25 tons. Maybe sometime we'll finally give up trying to lift it all. Tonight, geese grab at the quick sketch of stars. Over the slow tilt of Earth, they fall toward Polaris and fade into their voices. Three or four more poems. I don't know if you've ever walked into the Skaggs employee's bathroom, but this poem's called Signs of Life in Skaggs employee's bathroom. And if it's like the one in Columbia, you have to walk through miles of stockrooms that are very barren and alienating and have no relationship to human beings, but they have a great deal of relationship to consumers. And I got into this bathroom and I started looking for signs of life. Two mirrors the size of wedding cakes, but too thin, are screwed to the plaster wall. Below their sharp edge is a sink dirty enough to say there is work being done. The trash can in the corner is filled with brown carnations wadded by wet hands. Where the floor ends, walls give a spine to the board dust. Quick signature of frustrations, the faceless black mustache of scuffs crowd around the ankles. An off-balance ceiling fan, one blade living behind, stabs every corner of the air. And outside over the intercom, taped recordings play of doors being opened and closed. Here's another one of those evolutionary poems called An Evolution. I originally wrote this as a poem celebrating a rather infamous wedding, and from there it evolved into a comment on, a very abstract comment on human relationships. Rain forgets, wind steps back, smoke gathers. Birds flock above prairie fires. There are distant hills at the back of each eye where lives unravel in sudden spasms. Their slopes are a tangle of eyelashes. On the sandstone bluffs, a lizard is beaten flat. Its skin is rolled out into a highway. A few cars pass covered with scars. Hawks circle in thickening thermals. The day quickly loses its shadow in the dunes. The boiling heat bends you like a soup bone. The soul spice sweat. two more poems here. I have a very ambiguous relationship to poetry. I sometimes berate myself about it being self-indulgent and having no value except to myself, and then I question the value to myself spending so much time doing that and not doing other things. And so I find myself gravitating towards writing political poems. I like to think all the poems that I write are political, but sometimes they get so remote from being specific statements, I don't think people really hear them as political. But there are a few moments in human events that are just too hard to ignore. And one of them was what happened to Victor Jara. I'm not sure that. Well, anyway, he was a folk singer down in Chile when the military junta overthrew Allende's government. And they marched about 6,000 students from this university to the soccer stadium, and there they proceeded to keep them there for 3 days, periodically shooting into the crowd. And finally they discovered that this folk singer was there, and they put him up there, and then they cut off all his fingers. And then while they were cutting off all his fingers, he sang a song and eventually died standing up there. But it's just a brief comment on that. I just call it Chile. 6,000 faces memorized the sum of grass, the quotient of dirt, the multiplication of gravel as they lay on the field of the soccer stadium. By noon they are enrolled in the University of Bullets. Rifles applaud the graduation, reports joke through the crowd, shake hands slowly but turn away fast, diplomas wide as wounds are wrapped in thighs and stomachs. The pomp and circumstance never played as loud or long as the fingers marched away from his hands. The song gathers above the broken body, its last note tattooed inside the junta's ear. This last one, Utterly Gone, is a kind of humorous little poem on UFOs. In midsummer on Forrest Gladney's farm near Okita, Missouri, oaks are dense. The small pasture is barely visible through an occasional break in the leaves. Who would hike back this far over the rocky slopes? The snakes and the poison ivy of these hills, and leave with the right eye, the right ear, the tongue, utter gone, the sexual organs defiled. Is that what you think? The cuts through the hide are surgical. The blood has vanished. An unearthly smell has kept coyotes and vultures away from the carcass. Something is getting closer. The night aches with lights. Did the Angus break the news that there are two of each of us, and the one that they take is a stranger to us all? Thank you.